Good morning, everyone. Glad to see you and glad to see all of the black tiles. That's weird. I think if I weren't speaking, I would probably also make that same choice not to be seen, but I get it. This is the third message now in our series, Looking Back, Looking Forward, where we're looking at different people who have influenced our faith or our life of faith in different ways. So we've seen Gregory of Nyssa and Julian of Norwich. And today we're jumping to the 20th century, and I'm going to talk about someone who was very important to the civil rights movement. And I think it's appropriate for us to talk about him today because this is the day before the Martin Luther King holiday. And so I want to be talking a little bit about Howard Thurman, who was very influential in the civil rights movement. Now, you may or may not heard of his name. I first heard of him quite a few years ago because someone suggested that I read one of his many, many books. And I picked up a copy, you won't be able to see now, but of this book, Jesus and the Disinherited. And I didn't finish it. There were lots of voices in my head. You're a white woman, excuse me. He's a black preacher, he's writing for black Christians. And another voice in my head from my very rigid theological days said, this is liberation theology. It's not the same as real Christianity. And then another voice in my head said, oh, this book was published in the 40s. It has nothing, it doesn't apply to today. And so I set the book down with a clear conscience. But my conscience is no longer clear. And the last few years have shown me that as a woman of faith, as a follower of Jesus, I should have been listening to Black voices all along, and I will add queer voices. We jumped ahead too far there on that one, Jared, that slide. And Latinx voices and women's voices and the voices of the disabled and the imprisoned and on and on. And in fact, the last few years have shown me quite powerfully that I am still learning what it means to be a Christian. And then in some ways I'm more of a beginner than I ever was. And from finishing this book, I have learned that a book written in the 40s can be very prophetic and very applicable to today. So I'm gonna tell you a little bit about Howard Thurman. And then the second half of my message is we're gonna hear him in his own words. Well, you'll hear me saying his words. I've taken a lot of the information that you're going to hear today from his book, some facts from Wikipedia, from a CNN article, from a PBS webpage, and from a film that you can watch on YouTube, which I highly recommend. It's called Backs Against the Wall, The Howard Thurman Story. It's about an hour long. So he was born in 1899. And that was a year before my grandmother was born. And he lived in Daytona Beach, Florida. And the reason I mentioned my grandmother, she was very influential to me and she was kind of the same generation as he is. And it made him suddenly more accessible when I realized I knew someone who lived at the exact same time as he did. But he lived in the lowest point, one of the lowest points of race relations in post-Civil War America. Lynching was incredibly common. Discrimination was legal. And the Ku Klux Klan was popular. And now we're ready for that slide. The Ku Klux Klan held a massive march on Washington when Howard Thurman was 26 years old, paraded down Pennsylvania Avenue on August 8, 1925. And the next day there was a headline in the Washington Post, White Robed Klan cheered on march in nation's capital. That was the front page headline. Well, Thurman was 7 when his father died, and he was raised in part by his grandmother, Nancy, and she herself had been an enslaved person in the pre-Civil War era. She was illiterate, but his whole life, he saw her as his spiritual mentor. He said, I learned more about Jesus from my grandmother than from all the men who taught me, all the Greek, all of the theology, all the rest of it, he once said. And he graduated from seminary in 1926, a year after that photo was taken, and became a pastor of a Baptist church in Ohio. He was simultaneously a professor of religion at Morehouse and Spelman Colleges. And it was during this time that he was influenced by Rufus James, who was a Quaker, a mystic, and a social activist. Well, because of Thurman's faith and his interest in social activism as well as pacifism, he and a few other Black leaders were invited to India by the student Christian movement in India. Let's see, let's jump forward a slide, Jared. There we go. Those are the people that came, that went to India. That's Howard Thurman on the left, his wife, another pastor, and his wife. The Christians in India wanted to learn if there were ways or connections between the way Blacks in America were being oppressed and ways that the people of India were oppressed by the British Empire. Now, Christians in India were very familiar with white missionaries from England, and I think some from America. But Christians in India they did not know any Black Christians. And so this was a kind of a pioneering move for the Christians in India to request Black Christians to come and to learn from them. And what could the oppressed peoples of these two countries learn from each other? So during his time in India, which lasted about 6 months, the issue of segregation within the American Christian Church was brought up over and over again by the different people that Thurman met. Why was the church unable to address this national system of social and political discrimination? And toward the end of his time in India, Thurman met with Gandhi. Gandhi was a Hindu and a key figure in the Indian nationalist movement. And Thurman was the first Black Christian that Gandhi had ever met and spoken to. The Indian nationalist movement, as you probably recall, was a move to free India from British rule and British oppression. And the nationalist movement was eventually successful. But what Gandhi did was he developed his program of non-cooperation by utilizing two principles within Hinduism. The first was ahimsa, which we call nonviolence, but in Hinduism, it means do not injure, do not cause injury. And the second Hindu principle was satyagraha, which means to hold on to truth. Do not cooperate with what is wrong. Do not cooperate with what is not true. And so Gandhi asked Thurman a question. Why have Black Americans taken on the religion of the oppressor? And this was actually a question that Thurman heard often in India. And what he was able to say in return with conviction was that Jesus was a poor Jew from Nazareth, that Jesus himself had been threatened and convicted by oppressive power. And because of that, Christianity was especially relevant to the Black men and women of America who had, as Thurman always said, their backs against the wall. Thurman said, and this is a quote, "The striking similarity between the social position of Jesus in Palestine and the vast majority of American Negroes is obvious to anyone who tarries long over the facts. For years, it has been part of my own quest so to understand the religion of Jesus that interest in his way of life could be developed and sustained by intelligent men and women who were at the same time deeply victimized by the Christian church's betrayal of his faith." Thurman says that Gandhi also asked him, "Is there a power or a principle within Christianity that could be used to combat racism?" And so what Thurman learned in India was that Gandhi's commitment to faith and his expression of that faith was the foundation for the way the people of India were now responding to British rule. It was a faith-based response. Thurman realized that the core of Christianity, the ethic of love of neighbor, the sacrificial love of Jesus, could be foundational to dismantling racism. And so Thurman continued and he continued thinking and writing about his conversation with Gandhi for the rest of his life. And this book, Jesus and the Disinherited, he writes how faith in Jesus can be the catalyst for changing the evil of discrimination and oppression here in the United States. And he expounded on the idea of Jesus as a liberating figure. Jesus brought, Thurman brought together the message of the gospel together with nonviolent resistance. He wrote that we can't comprehend Jesus's message without first understanding the anger and fear that Jesus had to grapple with as a member of a despised minority under Roman occupation. Thurman emphasized Jesus's life as helping the disinherited of the world change from within so they could be empowered to survive in the face of oppression. A love rooted in what he called the deep river of faith would help oppressed peoples overcome persecution. And during this whole time, there is a serendipitous friendship, or if you believe in the sovereignty of God, a providential friendship has been occurring, because Thurman was a good friend of the first Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King Jr.'s father. They were college friends and lifelong friends. And in fact, young Martin Luther King Jr. was often at Thurman's house. And later still, while Martin Luther King Jr. was a doctoral student at the university where Thurman worked, it was Howard Thurman who inspired King to merge the New Testament ethic of love with the civil rights movement. Thurman also influenced James Farmer, who was the founder of the Congress of Racial Equality, known as CORE. And in fact, Thurman influenced many other members of the growing civil rights movement. He was fundamentally both a teacher and a pastor to others in the civil rights movement. And many people recall that Martin Luther King Jr. carried a copy of Thurman's book with him whenever he was involved in the public civil rights demonstrations. And he quoted from Thurman's book often. So we can say that Howard Thurman influenced both intellectually and spiritually an entire generation that became the leadership of the civil rights movement. Vincent Harding says in his foreword to the book, the spirituality that emerged and focused itself in Jesus and the Disinherited carried an insistent message that life under oppression provided no excuses for avoiding a path of courageous, creative integrity. As a matter of fact, while Thurman wrote with great compassion about the difficulties faced by the marginalized people whose lives are constantly besieged by the threatening, destructive power of the dominating forces, still this deeply loving and caring pastor of the dispossessed would not back away from the demands of a life of integrity, a life that refuses to give in to fear, hypocrisy, and hatred, the three hounds of hell that track the trail of the disinherited. Here's Thurman in his own words. It's from the first chapter, Jesus and Interpretation. Many and varied are the interpretations dealing with the teachings and life of Jesus of Nazareth. But few of these interpretations deal with what the teachings and the life of Jesus have to say to those who stand at a moment of human history with their backs against a wall, to those who need profound succor and strength to live in the present with dignity and creativity. Christianity has often been sterile and of little avail. The conventional Christian word is muffled, confused, and vague. Too often, the price exacted by society for security and respectability is that the Christian movement must be on the side of the strong against the weak. This is a matter of tremendous significance, for it reveals to what extent a religion that was born of a people acquainted with persecution and suffering has become the cornerstone of a civilization and of nations whose very position in modern life has too often been secured by a ruthless use of power applied to weak and defenseless peoples. Powerful and prophetic words, and you can see how a book written so long ago is so applicable today. Howard Thurman was also another type of pioneer. Long before the term interfaith dialogue became common, Thurman worshiped with people of other faiths. He said, whether I'm Black, white, Presbyterian, Baptist, Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, in the presence of God, all of these categories by which we relate to each other fade away. And he co-founded the first intentionally multiracial and multi-faith church in the United States. The church, called the Church for the Fellowship of All Peoples, is in San Francisco, and it's still an active church today. Now, despite Thurman's influence, he's not commonly known today. Many of the classic civil rights books and the documentaries fail to mention him. And some people say it's because he was so hard to define. He was a mystic, a deep thinker, a philosopher, a teacher, a pastor. He experienced God in nature, in music, in architecture. He was known for walking around and talking to trees. And in his churches, he experimented with different forms of worship, dance, silence, drama, and art, which for the time was very unconventional. And even his preaching style was unconventional. There's a book called Howard Thurman Essential Writings. And in that book, the author, Luther E. Smith, describes Thurman's unusual preaching style. He was a master in the use of silence. At times, he would be so overwhelmed by an understanding that he would just stop, and he would seem to be in a trance. Some people have said that even as he preached a sermon, it was clear that he was in a continuous conversation with God, still trying to grasp or understand what it was that God was saying through the word that he wanted Howard to convey. And he was also known as a spiritual activist. He embodied what some people call a prophetic spirituality. And today we might call it speaking truth to power as well. He also talked constantly about the inward journey, that every Christian needed a spiritual commitment and discipline that came from self-examination, that came from meditation, and that it came from prayer. But it's important to add that he wasn't interested in any theology that was preoccupied with the individual, with the self. He thought personal transformation should be accompanied by, and this is a quote, a burning concern for social justice and a commitment to moving past ideological, political, and the racial barriers that we've all created. Thurman combined, in the words of historian Martin Marty, the inner life, the life of passion, the life of fire, with the external life, the life of politics. Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders learned from Thurman that in a violent world, it is essential to be a contemplative person of prayer. Transformation of the soul occurs through prayer, and that one's spiritual life is key to addressing racism and violence. And this is my favorite thought from Thurman, because it applies to all of us, that the spiritual life is made real when it is lived in the midst of both pain and joy. The spiritual life is made real when it is lived in the midst of both pain and joy. So I have a cascade now of Thurman quotes. Thurman said, when grace breaks into our lives, we are empowered to overcome pettiness, to act more nobly than before, to create new relationships, including alliances with others against injustice and intolerance, to overcome impasses, social and otherwise, to be helpful in new ways. A strange necessity has been laid upon me to devote my life to the central concern that transcends the walls that divide and would achieve in literal fact what is experienced as literal truth. Human life is one, and all men are members of one another. And this insight is spiritual, and it is the hard core of religious experience. Now, before I go on for a minute, I just want you to see one way this country has honored Howard Thurman. This is a wall inside the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and that's Howard Thurman on the left. And here we go. People who knew Thurman and were there, because this was installed, I think in the 80s, say that this statue captures Howard's preaching style, that he's leaning forward, his heels are raised, he's intent on hearing God even as he is speaking. Well, in 1980, a year before Howard Thurman died, he gave a commencement address at Spelman College where he talked about what he called the sound of the genuine. And you can hear Howard Thurman the mystic in that phrase. He described it as something that flows through everyone, but can be rendered silent by ambition, dreams, and the daily mess of life. You are the only you that has ever lived. Your idiom is the only idiom of its kind in all of existence, Thurman said. And if you cannot hear the sound of the genuine in you, you will all your life spend your days on the ends of strings that somebody else pulls. Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Do not be silent. There is no limit to the power that may be released through you. Now, I deliberately made this a short message because we're on Zoom and didn't know what it was going to be like. But I want to end this message with a short video. It's a visual of a very different march on Washington than the one I opened with. And I'd like you to think of this video as a visual poem. I think Howard Thurman would have liked that phrase. It is a visual poem of what Howard Thurman inspired by his faith in the Jesus of the disinherited.